Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt.
Hi, welcome back to Willing to Adapt. I am Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
All right. Would you like to tell our listeners what we're talking about today?
Well, today we're talking about a book by Ronald Dahl?
I can never tell if you're joking or if you're serious.
Okay. So I could have sworn I heard someone pronounce his name differently. His last name.
Not Ronald. There's no N in it.
Oh my goodness. I just saw that for the first time. Roald. That's the word I couldn't figure out how to pronounce. Sorry. Roald Dahl.
You're just showing me the book and I'm just like...
My brain sometimes puts letters in. So, Roald Dahl, right?
Sure, Roald Dahl.
Roald Dahl.
I've always just said Roald Dahl. Like, I just combined the two Ds.
Okay, yeah, Roald Dahl, I guess. There we go.
Roald Dahl.
Matilda is the book. If those who are familiar with him, which, I mean, I think most people are, Roald Dahl wrote other books that I think people would probably recognize. Who doesn't recognize? We know the movie as Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Well, the remake was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
So. Okay. And did he write a sequel or was it all part of the same book?
It was a sequel.
Okay, so it was The Great Glass Elevator.
Yeah.
Okay.
But both movie versions combine elements from both.
Yes. And then James and the Giant Peach.
Yep.
BFG. Those are really the only ones that
The Witches.
You've mentioned it, but I'm not familiar with it sounds familiar, The Witches.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the other books when I was going through...
It's worth watching Halloween, I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we'll have to do... Maybe we'll do a podcast on that.
Angelica Houston's in it.
That does not surprise me.
I think she did it before she did Addams Family, though.
Oh, okay. What else? Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I did not know that he wrote that.
I don't think any of the others I've ever seen as movies...
Well, he originally wrote... books for adults, and then he transitioned.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I did not do my research on his past.
No worries. I did just brief research. And it's okay. I have the pages right here. So today we're talking about the book Matilda, but we're also talking about the 1996 adaptation Matilda.
Not the Netflix special, which I don't... Have you seen that?
I have not yet. It was funny because the musical came out, because obviously I like theater. My mom came to me and she said, Eric, they're making a musical version of Matilda. And I'm like, okay, cool. And she's like, I thought you'd be more excited. That was your favorite movie growing up. And I was like, yeah, I like the movie, not the book.
Oh.
I was like, and I'm pretty sure they're going to be adapting from the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I'm assuming, too. I haven't seen it, but they usually do. I think Anastasia is the only one where...
Well, because there's...
The musical actually adapted from...
Well, we can maybe talk about that one another time.
Actually, there's some people I spoke with who would like for us to do that one.
Oh, I'm down to do that one. Okay. I love the movie Anastasia. The musical's fine. All right. So do you want me to give a little bit of a backstory for Roald Dahl?
Of course, because I don't have one.
No worries. I'm not going to go into much detail because I don't think we need to. But Roald Dahl is a British author. We mentioned a bunch of books he's written. He was born September 13th, 1916. In Wales, and he died on November 23rd of 1990. He was very popular for children's books, obviously. He kind of had a range in his early life. He left to go fight in the Second World War with the RAF, the Royal Air Force. Yeah, he I'm trying to like scan through my page because I'm like, nope, not talking about that. Nope, not talking about that. But he was an assistant air attaché in Washington, D.C. for a while. He served as a spy, apparently, for the British government.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then he was encouraged to write by the novelist C.S. Forrester about his exciting RAF adventures, essentially. And they were published in the Saturday Evening Post.
Well, that's cool.
I like this. This one's interesting because I kind of know about this, but I forgot this was him.
Mm-hmm.
His first book was called The Gremlins. It was written in 1943. And it was written for Walt Disney.
But those little creatures, you don't feed them after midnight?
No.
Okay.
No. No, but they are the cause of problems like in machinery.
So, wait. he wrote what? Wait, what was it that he wrote? A short story, or
it said that he wrote a book, called The Gremlins.
So not like a cartoon or something like that. Now I'm curious.
I didn't research that, but I know that Disney. I think Disney used it in a cartoon, and then I know that in Epic Mickey you can see the Gremlins. Did you ever play Epic Mickey on the Wii?
No, I skipped the Wii. I was too old for that.
My Wii is behind me.
I didn't go back to Disney until the... Disney, I'm sorry, I didn't go back to Nintendo until the Switch.
The only reason why I kept my Wii after all these years is because it was the only console that you could play Epic Mickey on.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. I never played it, but yeah.
I heard they remastered it, though, so I don't know.
Okay. So, according to Disney Wiki, it was a film project in the 1940s that never saw production. They did write the book, illustrated as Roald Dahl. He wrote the illustrated storybook and the comic book, but that was about it. And then, yes, the Epic Mickey. That's when they appeared in the video game, Epic Mickey. All right, cool. So, yeah, it was a book that was meant to become a movie, but never made it into a movie.
Mm-hmm. After this achieved bestseller status with Someone Like You in 1953.
Like me?
Yeah, specifically. yeah. Anyways, eventually he turned primarily to writing children's books that would give him his lasting fame. I'm getting all this from Britannica, by the way. Encyclopedia Britannica. Unlike most other books aimed at young audiences, Dahl's works had a darkly comic nature, frequently including gruesome violence and even death. His villains were often malevolent adults who imperiled precocious and noble child protagonists. And most of his writings for children stem from the stories he would tell his children at night to put them to sleep. I was laughing, I came across a source that said he knew he had a good story when his children the following night would say, "Tell us more about that one."
I feel like a lot of children's, or the good children's authors wrote for their children.
Mm-hmm.
For better or worse.
Well, we saw some of that with Neil Gaiman, with Coraline,
mm-hmm.
for sure. One small tidbit I wanted to mention, it's not really that important, but you know, it's worth mentioning. While his lasting reputation to many is that of a beloved children's author, Dahl has also been a controversial figure, both during his lifetime and after. Some of his works, such as Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, were criticized at the time of their publication for their use of racial and sexual stereotypes. But his most notable transgressions, apparently, came outside of his fiction. In several interviews and nonfiction writings during the 1980s and 90s, Dahl expressed opinions that were widely viewed as anti-Semitic. While he defended himself as being anti-Israel rather than anti-Semitic, the distinction was not really accepted by a number of readers, and apparently his estate published an apology for his statements in 2020, which I think is funny.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't understand how an estate can apologize on behalf of someone if that person never did, but that's fine. I think it's worth mentioning, I think it's funny, if we will talk about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory at some point, I'm sure, but what it's mentioning is essentially in regards to the Oompa Loompas. Mm-hmm. I've never read the book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I have, that's the only other one I've ever read.
So, depending on which version you read, because over time it's been not censored, but rewritten.
Which doesn't surprise me, because I read they're going to rewrite them again in this upcoming years.
Which... I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah, I know.
But apparently, I looked into this one time, the Oompa Loompas originally were from Africa. Like, they were basically just Africans.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember reading that when I read the first book.
And then when they made the movie came out in the 70s, and it was after like, the Civil Rights Movement, and, you know, there was still a lot of racial tension and stuff.
Yeah.
And so the movie makers were like, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And so they just made it kind of fantastical.
And I do remember... maybe I read a rewrite of that later, but I can't remember. It was an older version, and I do remember that they were from a tropical, like the tropical rainforest,
mm-hmm.
and they were eaten by the...
Vernicious canids.
Yeah, and all those other things. Mm-hmm.
You see a little bit of that in the remake of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but it's still a little fantastical. So when was the first time you read the book version of Matilda?
This year.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I started last year and then finished this year.
You never read it as a kid?
No.
Okay.
No, in fact, the only book I ever read was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay. Do you want to give some background information about the book, Matilda, or do you want me to?
Go ahead, because I don't have any background information.
All right. Matilda is a 1988 children's novel, obviously we said by Roald Dahl. So in my research, I found that he pulled from a lot of people in his real life to write some of these characters. Mm-hmm. He was inspired by real people that he knew. But at the same time, he was writing this story because he was very put out by how overwhelming television had become in society.
Mm-hmm.
And he was worried that essentially reading would just go the way of the dodo.
Which, was he wrong?
Yes and no. He wanted to write a book about a child that loved to read. Apparently, he rewrote the book drastically.
Hmm.
Originally, he wanted to write a book about a little girl who had these like telekinetic powers and was kind of more of like a bad character and was using them for wrong reasons. And like, I guess in the original version, she would help her teacher, who was not a good person either, to help win bets at the horse races.
Interesting.
And so I think you can see some of that in the beginning of the book with how she punishes her parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess the first person he took it to as a book said, I think we should adjust this. I don't think this is the route you want to go. How about if we change it so that she's actually a good character,
mm-hmm.
even though she will do these things here and there. They kind of had a falling out, and so he ended up taking it to another publishing company.
Hmm.
But that's how he changed the book.
Interesting, because a lot of that is what I wrestled with in the storyline, was the ethical dilemmas, mm-hmm. especially coming from a parent's perspective, which we'll talk about later. I'll bring up later.
Right.
But reading it as an adult and as a parent for the first time, I was trying to imagine, because I know you said you liked the book or the movie, and so I was trying to imagine, okay, you know, if I was younger, how would it come across? So it's interesting that the publisher would have him, but even the publishers are aware of that. I don't know if they would still do that today. I feel like the, what is that called? Where you're not good, but you're not bad. It's the more morally ambiguous characters.
Oh, yeah.
Are more in vogue.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
We've kind of talked about that. How about your favorite superhero, Superman? Mm-hmm. All right. Do you want me to give a summary for the book?
Oh, let me give it.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yes, I have a summary.
Okay. So I had one ready to go from Spark Notes.
Keep it handy. So the summary is, there's this young girl with powers, and she meets this teacher or professor, and the professor recruits her to teach her how to use the powers, and then they form a superhero. Oh, wait, no. Sorry. That was X-Men. Never mind. Go ahead with your summary. So when I was reading the book, watching the movie, actually, that was the first thing that came to mind. I felt like I'm like,
this is Rogue.
I was thinking more Jean Grey, but
got it.
Yeah. But I was thinking like, this is like a child's version of the superhero story, basically going on. But go ahead with your summary.
I was a little impressed. I was like, oh, cool. You got a summary for me.
All right, so I'll try to give it a go for the summary. Basically, it's about this young girl who's born into a family, an average family, working class family, a little on the shadier side, kind of lazy, nothing like her. In fact, sometimes I wonder if she was actually their kid.
Oh my gosh. You're gonna write like a really dark version of
the kind of. She's very, to use the word that Miss Honey uses, precocious.
Mm.
She, from the young age, I think it starts at, what, 2 or 3? She's already reading or starting to read. She teaches herself how to read. She teaches herself how to do math.
And she talks like a regular adult.
And she talks like an adult. And meanwhile, she's kind of watching her parents live their mediocre lives, basically. Her dad, who runs a car shop in which he's...
A used car shop
in which he's kind of a little shady. And the brother is kind of the typical opposite sibling, where there's not much intellectually there. The mother, very materialistic, and is not really a mother. Maybe to the son a little bit more, quite a bit more, but not to Matilda mm-hmm. at all. And so the book goes on. She has to fend for herself. I think one of my favorite parts is she started learning how to cook for herself before she was even 5. Eventually she realizes she can leave the house. She goes to the library and starts reading books. She reads all the children's books, which the librarian eventually catches on and starts giving her adult books. She reads a ton of those. And then the story goes on to where she eventually ends up in school. Oh, yeah, there's the whole... So before she goes
there's
to school...
There's, like, the parent incident.
Yeah, she starts kind of playing... She starts getting angry at her parents and her dad and starts playing pranks on them.
Mm-hmm.
There's the parrot in the fireplace one. There's gluing her dad's hat on. There was the dyeing his hair with peroxide and bleach, or blonde, a mix of the two. Actually, I've never dyed hair, so I don't know if...
It's bleach.
So peroxide makes it blonde?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I've never done that.
Have you ever watched MASH, the TV show?
Yeah, long time
ago. So, Hot Lips Houlihan, Margaret.
Huh?
The running joke is, like, she's always putting peroxide in her hair. And then Frank will be like, oh, did you cut yourself again?
That makes sense. Yeah, after that she goes to school. She makes one real friend, Lavender. And I know she kind of bonds with some of the other kids. It's a little different between
Hortensia.
I think it was Hortensia in the book, too. Yeah, and then there was the boy. I can't remember his name. Nigel.
Yes, Nigel. He's not in the movie.
No?
No.
I was trying to remember, and I didn't remember.
He's kind of replaced by Bruce.
Okay. And then there's different incidents happen at school. She meets Ms. Honey, who mm-hmm. becomes her teacher, who takes a shining to her, especially because of her brilliance. And then she meets the famous Ms. Trunchbull. And shenanigans ensue.
Name.
I know. Shenanigans ensue. I mean, I feel like I'm giving the whole book away here at this point.
Well, I think it's important because we need to know it before we move on to the movie.
Yeah.
But Miss Trunchbull is mean.
She's mean. She's the headmistress. She's just cruel.
Well, horribly abusive.
Horribly abused. Yes. In fact, I was even uncomfortable reading
it. I was very uncomfortable reading some of it. And I was listening to the audio version of it.
Okay. Yeah. Especially when Ms. Honey is talking about growing up with her. And so,
but like, she like throws kids out the window. She like threatens to rip off their ears, and
supposedly parents are too afraid to even deal with it.
Mm-hmm. That was what I thought was interesting. We'll talk about that more. But I like how the parents kind of know about what's happening in the book.
Yeah.
Well, and then I guess the kids also like to pull pranks on the Trunchbull because of the way that she treats them.
Yeah.
So they'll pull pranks on her. Just like how Matilda did it with her parents.
Mm-hmm. So as it goes on, Matilda starts realizing that the more angry she gets, she has the ability to look at something and focus on it and make it move.
Tell me you didn't get carried by it.
I did. But it's like that's where I think the morality issue started kind of wavering for me. And I think jokingly, I wrote down Dark Side of the Force.
Oh, okay.
LOL. Because it happened first when she got angry. And after that, she learned if she concentrated, she could actually do it at the move things at will.
And it came on very fast.
It did, yeah. And
that's when she shows Miss Honey.
Yes. She eventually, something happens where a glass goes flying.
Lavender put a newt in a glass jug, which Matilda sent flying into Miss Trunchbull.
That was the same in both versions.
Similar. Yeah. In the book, that's when Miss Honey is told by Matilda that she has these powers.
Mm-hmm.
And then she shows her, and then Miss Honey takes her for tea and talks to her and she tells her her past and how Miss Trunchbull's actually her aunt and she's very abusive and she lives in the house that Miss Honey grew up in and essentially like stole the house and the money from her.
Yeah.
And is still like taking money from her from her school earnings and stuff. And then the ultimate vengeance from Matilda.
That's different in both of them.
It is different.
From the two. But they both have the same scene.
It has the same outcome either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they both have the scene at the school where she's riding on the board. Did she lose
telekinetically?
Telekinetically.
In the book, she writes with her mind, she writes the chalkboard and pretends to be Miss Honey's father, who's deceased. She tells Miss Trunchbull to give the money in the house back to Miss Honey, and then the Trunchbull faints and eventually does give everything back to Miss Honey and takes off and is never seen again.
Yeah.
And in the book, Matilda is moved up to a higher level because she's so smart. And they say that she loses her powers because she's now able to use her brain fully.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Because she's having to actually think for the first time.
Right. And in the end, like, she's best friends with Miss Honey and stuff. But in the end, her parents have to flee to Spain in the book because her dad was caught with like stolen goods or something like that.
They were. It implies that the they're closing in on him.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's in the book, like, you hardly hear anything about it until the ending.
Until the ending,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it just comes out of left field.
Yeah, no, in the movie it was a running...
Yeah, and so Matilda gets them to agree to allow her to stay with Matilda.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how the book ends.
Yeah, very quick ending.
Yes, well, the book is short. Like, it's a kid's book, but it's short. It moves fast.
It does.
Yeah. Did you like the book?
I did. I actually really liked the book. Because I think there was a lot of... It actually made me wrestle with a couple things here and there. Nothing big, like, but, what? You know, ethical or just kind of like even the whole how deep he goes into... Like, I'm reading the abuse that's either implied or actually stated. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know why, because maybe of a movie I recently saw or TV show. You know, like, what is this like as a, if you come from an abusive... Really, you know, a family or a relationship, and you're reading something like this. I think I've also had a handful of conversations with someone recently about narcissistic individuals and the way they gaslight you and kind of manipulate and things go on. And so I'm here, I am reading about Miss Honey, and I'm thinking, like, wow. And then there were some other things too. Like, I always tend to get I'm very cautious when I'm reading something and it's very pro one generation.
What do you mean?
So, in the beginning, like a lot of children's books, you get the impression like it's the children understand, the children know, or the child actor, and adults are basically foolish people who are in the background that really don't understand what's going on.
That seems to be a very, it seems to be 20th century mentality.
Yes.
Like, especially later 20th century.
I will say, though, that in the three books that I, or the three movies I've seen of this, two books now, the one thing, and I wrote this down as I was reading, is that they're on their way to the cottage, and he says, like, all of a sudden Matilda just got super animated and just started talking. And as I was reading that, and, you know, I wrote down, it's the, you know, it's something that you sometimes find in literature, and maybe you've seen it more. Where, in this case, the other main adults around here are nitwits or idiots or whatever. But you find that one wise adult who understands. And you see that in Charlie, where it's Willy Wonka and kind of his grandpa. And what was the other one I read? The BFG, it's the giant. And you kind of see it in other authors too, but they find that one adult who they can actually go to and talk to, and I think that's when it kind of softened it a little bit for me. The other thing I really thought was interesting, and that you mentioned the history about the writing of it and how he had to tone it down after presenting it to the first publisher, is he really hit on her innocence. She's not even aware of how her gift could be used, you know, just the naivety or maybe innocence, I guess, of the power that she has.
It was interesting because in the book, Miss Honey, she gets very philosophical at times. She was referring to Matilda in a way that, like, almost equated her to Jesus, which I was a little unsettled by. but she was saying, like, every once in a while comes someone in our life
Yeah, I remember that.
And just like, you know, it could be Jesus and all these things. I'm like, okay, no. but I mean, it was interesting. It was funny because in the book, Miss Honey kind of refers to Matilda in many ways almost like she's a science experiment.
She's like,
okay, we need to test this. We need to see what you can do and figure this out. But like the way that she talked about it, it really felt like, okay, well, let's perform some experiments now.
And see, I think that was the balance that you usually get with adults. Because, I mean, how many times in movies do you see where the adult all of a sudden is very skeptical and they believe the child? And you see the kind of like in my mind, I keep on going to Harry Potter. But I don't know if that's the best example. I'm trying to think of another one where they want to trust in the adult. So like in other books or movies, you'll see this, where they want to trust in the adult, but the adult's being cautious.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's that... As a kid, you can take all these risks because you don't realize the dangers of going too far. And as a kid, you know, you sometimes are feeling so invulnerable. So children don't necessarily think about what's going to happen, what's going to go on, the consequences of their actions. like I think what you saw as a science experiment, I just saw as the natural inhibitions or worry that comes with as an adult. Like, let's not rush this, let's not go too far. And I think I've seen that enough in other characters. And usually in a movie or something else, the main protagonist will get upset because the adults just don't understand them and they continue on.
Nobody understands me.
Exactly, yeah. And here, of course, I think it's a shorter medium, the book, and so it just continues on.
One thing that really put me off in the book is, to me, it seemed like Miss Honey was using Matilda. Because in the book, Miss Honey doesn't explain anything about her past or anything until she finds out that Matilda has these powers.
Okay.
And so Matilda shows her, oh, look, I can move things with my mind and things like that. And it's just like, want to have tea with me? And then she, like, brings over and she tells her this whole backstory about everything. And then, like, right away, Matilda's like, well, I'm going to fix
it. I could see.
Like, I don't actually think Miss Honey was using her, but it came off that way a bit to me. And and to be fair, I came from the movie first growing up, and the movie is different.
Yeah. Whereas I saw the movie once and then read the book. So I didn't get that that feeling from her.
I think the bulk of this conversation is going to be the differences between the movie and the book.
Yeah, I think
so. Is there any like thematic conversations about the book that you want to go through, or anything specifically about the book only that you want to talk about before we move on to the movie?
Yeah, there are a couple other things that caught my eye. So there was that one about how I say it. It's
how British it was.
How British it was. Yes. No FBI on this one. But no, the other thing I caught was, so I wanted to kind of finish up that whole wisdom idea, because I thought it was interesting as to how Dahl handles it. You have the innocent child who goes to the wise adult for assistance, or at least to share, and then it doesn't stop there. Because then I believe in the later area, it talks about Matilda's wisdom, and in a way it balanced out. I've never seen other books really. I mean, I'm sure they've done it, but this one's really spelled out. Mm. It's when she's having tea at her house, her cottage.
Oh, yours has pictures.
Yeah.
How cute.
It says, "That's all right," Matilda said. In her wisdom, she seemed to be aware of the delicacy of the situation, and she was taking great care not to say anything to embarrass her companion.
Oh, no. Matilda very much was like an adult
yes.
in this book, especially compared to other kids around her. Matilda basically was an adult who just was very innocent.
No, I agree. And I think that, but I liked how he brought out that in her innocence, there was a wisdom, you know, and she had already learned.
She had read so much, so she had learned a lot.
True. And she was aware enough, unlike a lot of, so I've met a handful of, in my life, I've met a handful of people who were certified geniuses. Mm-hmm. And so most geniuses that I've met are socially inept or no, because the ones who had social skills were probably narcissists, and they weren't like high genius. They were kind of borderline near genius. But
are we talking like Big Bang Theory?
Yes, exactly. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, where they don't have that. You know, even if they do have a minor social skills, they're usually still not well versed. And that was something as I'm reading it, and the genius part is coming out of her. She had those social skills, which also meant that she paid attention to other people. So we've talked about intelligence and other things, I think, in some of our past podcasts.
Right.
As an intellectual myself, one of the things I've had to learn, and it's been hard for me, was to learn social cues growing up. I've had a handful of friends who will point out where I get caught up in my head and I don't think about other people and what's going on. And I've noticed, especially with precocious females, that can be the case if they're a high genius, but not always, you know. And I thought it was interesting how in his version of a special child, not only does she have that high level of intelligence, but she's able to pick up and observe and watch things, you know. And I think that she's a rarity where she has that even emotional, what they call it, emotional intelligence or social intelligence.
I would make the argument because of all of the books that she had read, she's able to empathize with people more. So she's picked up on some of that, like social intelligence.
That would make sense. Because if she was more of a science.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But because she had read so much like classic literature, especially, and a lot of classic literature comes from like previous time periods where a lot of that is definitely ingrained.
Yeah.
And so it would make sense that she would be able to to know, okay, I'm not going to talk about this because it's going to make her uncomfortable, mm-hmm. essentially.
And that kind of leads me to the other part of the book that I really
love. Let your children read,
people. Yes, I agree. If I have another kid, I'm going to read them. We're going to start with Herodotus and Plato.
Just force your current child to read.
That I've tried. No.
Sit down. I'm going to read this to you. If you're trying to acquire more books, thrift stores are your friend.
Agreed.
You can get them for dirt cheap.
Yeah.
That, and there have been so many times where I've helped people move and they were getting rid of books. And I'm like, well, I'll take it.
Last time I moved, I actually let a friend of mine borrow some books and he's yet to return it.
I have a notebook specifically that tells me who's borrowed my books. That way I can keep track.
I should have done that. Yeah. My daughter has a couple of my comics.
Is it right here? Yep. Right there.
I may need a book like that to allow people to check stuff out. But yes, that's share the love of reading. And we're hoping that's what we're doing with this podcast is encouraging our listeners to check out books.
Are you sure we're not just giving people a way to not read the books?
Probably. Some won't, but...
Why would I need to read the book? Like, I've listened to the podcast now. They've given me all the spark notes.
I know. That's why I'm always a little leery about giving a full summary of the book. In fact,
my hope is that we spark an interest and yes. that we get somebody... Just like how somebody can watch a movie adaptation and then say, I want to read the book now.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it can get you to read it, that's fine.
So you want to go into the movie?
Yes. Do you want me to talk about the movie or do you want to talk about the movie?
You probably remember it a lot better than I do.
I do.
Yeah. I've only seen it once, some time ago.
Oh. Well, then that answers my question. Mm-hmm. When was the first time you watched this movie?
I think it was like November, December of last year. I can't remember for sure.
For this podcast. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Matilda is a 1996 American fantasy comedy. It's co-produced and directed by Danny DeVito with a screenplay by Nicholas Kazan and Robin Swickard. Swikeboard? I don't know. it stars Mara Wilson in the title role. Danny DeVito is also in it. He narrated it.
Oh, okay.
Did you know?
Yes, that's right. He did.
I did not notice that as a kid, though. For some weird reason, I think because the narrator and... Because he also plays the father.
Correct.
I think because their voices are obviously the same, but mm-hmm. because their tone is different.
Yeah.
I don't really think I paid attention to it much as a kid.
Okay.
And then Rhea Perlman plays her mom, and she is also... she was married to Danny DeVito at the time, mm-hmm. which is fun. And Beth Davids played Mrs. Honey. And Pam Ferris played the Trunchbull.
Mm-hmm.
And she is like the sweetest woman. I just showed you a clip.
Yeah, prior to recording.
Yeah, from her interview. And she's like the sweetest.
Very different than, yeah.
And definitely her role. Looks prettier in real life. Did you know that she played Aunt Marge in Harry Potter?
I was wondering about that. Yes. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Though. It was released in America in August 2nd, 1996 by Sony Pictures under their TriStar Pictures label. It received positive reviews from critics and praise for being did towards its faithfulness to the novel and Danny DeVito's direction. But at the time, by box office standards, the film was commercially unsuccessful. It grossed $47 million on a $36 million budget. So it got its money back and a little bit more, but it wasn't super successful. But what made it successful was its run on rentals and DVD and then eventually Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those where it did okay
yeah.
in theaters, but then it like blew up in rentals.
Like a lot of movies, I think.
Yeah. And that's actually how I found out about the movie. I fell in love with that movie. I don't even know if I just found it at Blockbuster.
Interesting.
But it was the movie I would always rent from Blockbuster as a kid. I think it's one of the movies that really got me into reading as a kid.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And I had a major crush on Anne Beth Davids as Miss Honey.
I can see that.
This is one of my favorites. I own this movie. I definitely have some nostalgia, but I have like an emotional attachment to it. I think we'll say straight up right now. The movie, similar to other adaptations we've talked about.
Yeah.
Because the book is so short, mm-hmm. just like in Coraline, mm-hmm. they have to lengthen it.
Mm-hmm.
And so how are you going to lengthen it? You know? And so automatically, like, there's going to be stuff in the movie that's not in the book.
Oh, of course.
And so that's just blanket statement.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I think it's actually very close to the book.
It is. I mean, the stuff they added in to my first watching and reading, the two main ones that stick with me is the sub-story of the dad and the FBI watching him.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that came out of left field in the book.
In the book, yeah, I think the author just needed a reason for the parents to leave.
Have like a happy
ending. Mm-hmm.
In the movie, I checked the time on that. Uh-huh. It's only like 15 minutes into the movie that you find out the police are after him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's like really early because they're watching the house for most of the movie.
They are.
So they're trying to get evidence against him and stuff.
So there's that part, and then, of course, the house part where they added the action scene pretty much.
Well, they... And one of the things that they added is they have her, like, exploring and strengthening her powers. Whereas in the book, she kind of just gets them, and she has them. Like, she does a little bit of strengthening in the
book. Yeah, there's, like, one chapter where she's strengthening
it. But it's so fast.
Yeah.
In the movie, I think they mellow out her character a lot. I think because in the book, it's she takes a lot upon herself to do these quote-unquote precocious things.
Mm-hmm.
Like the pranks and things like that.
Yeah.
And it mentions that other kids do similar things as well.
Mm-hmm.
She's just smarter about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the movie, they actually give her a lot of reasoning for it. So in the book, she kind of just takes it upon herself to just mess with her parents and like punish them for how like they treat her. But in the movie, they included a bit where the father tells her when a person is bad, that person needs to be punished. And the narrator says it introduced the idea that a kid could hypothetically punish their parent for being bad.
Oh, I don't remember.
And that wasn't in the book.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. And so there's definitely things like that in the movie that I feel like in a way kind of make her less quote unquote bad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you're like, oh, well, this is something I could do.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I think in the movie I felt she was more mischievous.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
I thought she was more mischievous in the book, but I think that's the difference between watching the movie as a kid and then reading the book as an adult.
Probably.
In the book, though, I read, I actually listened to the audiobook, and it was Kate Winslet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I would give it a listen, because she's really good at voices.
Oh.
I would forget it's her.
Yeah.
Because she did voices for every character.
That's cool.
Yeah. I was surprised. Yeah, I got a kick out of it.
That's cool.
I listened to it on Audible.
Okay.
Yeah. I just canceled my subscription because I'm so dirt poor. Like, even, like, with Lavender.
Because
in the book, Lavender just takes it upon herself to just put a newt in her water. And she, like, planned it ahead of time. Like, she's like, I'm so excited for this. I'm going to do this. And, like, it was, like, the day before, at least. She was like, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But in the movie, Lavender just thinks about it, like, on the fly. Like, she doesn't give it any thought. She's just like, do this.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, because one of the biggest differences, I guess maybe we should just go in order.
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. They're very similar. I think the biggest difference, obviously, we said, is in the book, it's clearly England.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, it's America.
Yeah.
Because it's for an American audience. And it really didn't matter.
No.
Other than that, you don't see a lot of specifics with Matilda. There's a lot of kind of montages with her growing up.
Yeah.
But you get the idea early on that she's really intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They definitely lean into the comedy for the movie.
They did.
There was a lot less comedy in the book, and the movie was much more comical.
That I picked up, because I noticed the fantastical didn't really come until you meet... I mean, there was maybe hints of it, but it wasn't until you meet Miss Trunchbull.
You know why I think they had to lean into it, though?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find the same, but it's just me.
Yeah.
And if they had been really... They had been very direct in the adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been maybe too much for an audience member. It would have been maybe too difficult to watch. I'm thinking, I mean, there are things they added that weren't in the book, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, the one thing I'm thinking of is when they take Matilda home from the hospital as a baby, and she's not even buckled down. Like, they put this baby in the car seat in the trunk area of the car, basically.
Oh, that's right.
In a station wagon.
Yeah.
And she's just, like, sliding around. But, like, they made it really funny.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if they didn't make it funny, it would have been almost traumatizing.
Yes, considering what we talked about earlier about when you get to later parts of the book and it is a little more traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that. I felt a lot of it was the, like, a lot of the movies made for, not children, but, you know, like that type of genre of movie, that was the humor at the time, at that era, back in the 90s. You saw a lot of that.
Well, I don't think you could put even if it was fake, I don't think you could put a kid in a car seat and like have them sliding around the back like that nowadays.
Yeah, no. But I mean, it was kind of, I think I'm thinking of like all the other movies I didn't watch. Or I saw bits and pieces.
You see all those movies I've never watched?
I saw bits and pieces of, and they all have that kind of, that borderline fantastical comedy aspects.
In the book, there's definitely times where Matilda came off to me not spiteful and not malicious. I don't know. There's something in her, how she came off to me, that was a little off-putting. Whereas in the movie, she came off more innocent to me.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know if that's just because I watched as a kid growing up and whatever. But she just always had this like air of innocence about her, even when she was being mischievous in the movie. Mm-hmm.
The movie, they added the subtext of being a child in a frustrating situation. I don't think
it's her like her inner strength. Mm-hmm. That's something in the movie that's not really in the book. This idea of like her having this inner strength that helps her get by, and
yeah, like, it's spelled out at the end.
Yeah,
I think, but you don't. Yeah, you're right. You don't.
It's got that great montage where they play "Send Me on My Way." The you know what I'm talking about? The one where she's like four and she's like cooking.
Oh yes, yes.
The pancakes and yeah,
yeah.
There's fish fingers in the microwave.
Yeah,
I love how she's walking to the library to go. Just find a book because she desperately wants a book.
Yeah.
After her dad said, there's nothing you can get from a book, you can't get from TV faster. Which, kind of. But I like when she's walking to the library, she's like behind like a bunch of like morbidly obese people. I don't know why that was a choice. I think it was just to show how small she was.
Possibly. But I also wonder if it was a loose commentary on society.
Maybe. Well, America was not as heavy back then.
Oh, okay. So maybe it wasn't. It was just to show her
size.
I will say,
I used to really love the librarian in the movie. Mm. I thought she was the sweetest librarian. And I tell you what, even now, I really want to go to that library. I think that library is magical. They definitely leaned into like this like cathedral, like fantasy aspect for that library. It definitely seemed like they wanted to show this like grand thing. Because they could have picked any library.
Yeah.
But they picked this library with, like, stained glass and like beautiful architecture, and it felt like a sanctuary.
Once again, there was a subtext, there was an underlying message of move away from your television, go out and read. There's grander, more, you know, places out there.
But even, like, on her own personal level, like, she found this safe place, this beautiful safe place. That's kind of what I got. Yeah. And then she would walk there every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got really angry in the book. Obviously, I think it's maybe a little bit more of a sign of the time that it was written, because 88. But in the book, there's definitely times where the librarian was, Madame Miss Phelps, whatever her name is, where she would talk to Matilda.
Yeah.
Because they have more of a relationship in the book.
Yeah.
And she would hear about all the things. And in the book, it literally says, the librarian thought about, maybe I should do something. Maybe I should like call someone in regards to this child. Maybe something's not quite right here, but I don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
I mean, I would venture to argue that that's still a sentiment today.
Well, I think he was being satirical.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was kind of making a statement about society at the time too.
Oh yeah.
Because she wasn't the only one who said something like that.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing in the movie is it gives a lot more reasoning for what happens.
Yeah.
In the book, it never really explains why she's not in school.
That is true.
Yeah.
And then
she just randomly goes to school one day, right?
Yeah, where the mother, I think the parents forget to send her to school in the movie.
But in the movie, they introduce this idea of they're having the stolen car parts sent to the house, and they need someone at the house to sign for them.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. Okay.
So they introduce that as an idea for why she needs to be home.
Mm.
And then it wasn't until, like, after all the shenanigans, like, with her gluing his hat, and after she finds out that he's a crook, basically, and is, like, screwing people over with cars in, like, a really funny scene in the restaurant. That scene wasn't in the book.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. That scene where, like, the desserts go flying and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Mm-hmm. And then Rhea Perlman's stunt double goes head over heels over the table. So apparently, for that scene, in order for the hat not to come off, they had like small wires attached from the hat down like below his shirt, and it was like wrapped around his body.
Oh, wow.
And so like it was pulling on him.
That's funny.
And so that's why the hat wouldn't come off.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was time for it, they just like released the wire.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't watch any behind the scenes stuff. I should have. I always say that for all our podcasts. Yeah, I do remember that. I do remember that scene. It was funny. There's a couple little things that you brought up. I forgot all about those in the movie.
I think they replaced the parrot bit with that. I don't think they could have translated the parrot bit as well for the film.
Yeah, no, I felt that was...
Even in the book, I thought it was weird.
It made sense, but yeah. It was a very Mary Poppin-ish type.
Oh, sure.
You know, that's why I kind of felt it was very English.
It was very English, yes. Yes. Like, there's a ghost in there.
It was British humor.
Yeah. I was like, that poor bird.
I know.
That's funny. She kind of also, like, messed with the neighbor boy in order to get the bird, too.
That's funny. That was part of the book I read a long time ago, so I don't remember that.
I just remember that the way she got the bird, I was kind of like, I don't think I like the way that you acquired this bird.
Let's go back and read that.
And then she like instantly stuffs it up the chimney, basically.
Poor bird.
Yeah. Anyways, I think it was a good move to change it.
Yeah.
And it definitely added to the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we were saying they give a lot of reasoning, so I'll keep talking about that. But they ease into the idea that she has these powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it slowly comes around. As you realize, from the get-go, she's this really intelligent girl who's very gifted. And so she's capable of a lot.
Yeah.
But, like, nobody gives her the time of day.
Mm-hmm.
And so through books, especially, she, like, goes into her own mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she's able to, like, help grow that. But in the movie specifically, it really shows how she's slowly learning about what powers she can have.
Mm.
And the first scene we see that in is when she blows up the TV. And that's not in the book.
No, it's not.
No.
Yeah.
I kept waiting for it in the book.
Hmm.
Did you read the book first or watch the movie?
Watch the movie.
Ah, see?
Yeah.
I knew you would do that.
It's easier to watch the movie first.
The book's so short.
True, yeah. True.
My favorite part, though, in that scene,
mm-hmm.
I like it because the movie has a really good flow. And it has a very good, like, emotional flow.
Mm-hmm.
Matilda's upset with her parents because of the way that they treat her.
Yeah.
And she thinks that she can essentially punish them because of what her father introduced to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so she like, punishes him with these, like, little pranks, like, bleaching his hair and, like, gluing the hat down and so on. And then he's upset because of the hat and, you know, he's been embarrassed and so on and so forth. And then he sees that Matilda is reading a book when they should be watching television.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets really angry at her and he like rips the book up and like forces her to watch the TV. And it's like this whole bit where they're all laughing and stuff. And then she blows up the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's just like a really good flow of like how it works out. Like it didn't feel like it skipped around. Like it really felt like it went into each other.
It would grate on me when she did react emotionally. Even if it was, at first when it's unconscious or subconscious, it's not as bad. But when it's done on purpose,
sure,
I have a little harder time with
that. Well, I think that was one of the differences between the characters, because in the movie, it seems like she does react a little bit more emotionally to what's happening around her, especially like in regards to like her powers coming out and things like that. But in the book, I almost felt like in some ways she was a bit more conniving. Like she was like, well, I know what I can do and I'm going to plan this out and I'm going to make this work. And in the movie, though, it seems like a lot, even when she's like, quote unquote, punishing like her dad or whoever, it was never really planned ahead. Like it was always just like on the fly. So she had to plan out the whole parrot bit.
Yeah.
But in the movie, she wakes up in the morning and has the idea to like do this thing to her dad.
And see, for me, that's a little more, I look at it as emotion based.
Sure.
And so when I see emotion based, it detracts from intelligence.
Sure. But I'm trying to make the argument that, like, she didn't plan these things out ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are things that can be remedied. Like, she can learn to kind of control this and know that she doesn't have to just go on the fly like this. Like, she's still smart about it.
Yeah.
But I found, like, in the book, she, like I said, she felt kind of more conniving. Like she planned these things really far in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she really relished in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that.
It's interesting. I mean, I did feel that in certain situations, but I think I also felt that in the movie. So they kind of were this very similar to me.
Sure.
I didn't see a difference between the two as much.
I think I'm more forgiving with people who respond emotionally to things and then are like sorry about it, even though she wasn't necessarily sorry about it.
Oh, no, I agree with you on that point. Yeah.
Because if it was planned out ahead of time, like that's just more malicious.
I think part of what I gave her, it was easier to grant her planning it out. And this is where I think, not forgive her, but I think I balanced it. And that's one of the things where it was kind of inconsistent in the the characterization. And I kind of wonder now that you've mentioned the whole that he rewrote it because of what the publisher told him. Now I'm wondering, like, what are vestiges of the original manuscript, but what is the new stuff he added? And there were times when I'm reading her character where I wasn't quite sure of her
motivation.
Who is she really? Yeah.
Right, yeah.
There was some...
The second half of the book, she's different than the first.
Yes. Yeah. I felt like the first half, though, she was a lot more... Now that you mentioned it, I guess vindictive is a good word to characterize her.
Right. I think what really helped her is getting out of the house.
Doesn't that help usually?
Yes. I think if I can sum up the differences between the book and the movie, in the book, it felt more like an exploration of her character and these powers that she has.
Yeah.
But just like her character in general. Because in the end, she loses the powers. Yeah. She doesn't need them
anymore. Does she lose them in the movie? I can't remember. No, she keeps them.
She keeps them.
Yeah, I don't remember the end. Did they show that in the ending?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It was saying that she never needed to use them. But after the narrator says that, she has a book come to her.
That's starting to sound familiar again.
Yeah. Like, it was, in the movie, it's more like the idea of, like, it came to her because, like, she needed them for that time kind of thing. In the book, it was more like because her intelligence was not being used. Like, it was, like, just coming out in this way sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest difference that I've noticed is, like I said, in the book, it was more like an exploration of her character and, like, a character study, you know?
Yeah.
And so, because even in the book, it didn't really seem like she had a major villain. Like, the Trunchbull was horrible and her parents are terrible, but, like, there was nobody really out for her.
Yeah.
She was actually the one who was helping other people, specifically Miss Honey.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie felt more like an adventure.
Which is kind of normal for when you're making, you know, I think they had to kind of make it that way. And in some ways... Yeah. You see that, I think, with a lot of novels, especially children's novels, where knowing how writing is done, you can see how they're making it up as they go along.
But they definitely lean in the movie to how the Trunchbull is the main villain.
Yeah.
Because in the book, I was actually a little upset by how much she's not in the book.
Hmm.
Like, she's definitely formidable and terrible.
Yeah.
And horribly abusive.
Yeah.
But like, even in the book, it seemed like the kids were able to, like, mess with her.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the movie, it seemed like they really couldn't mess with her.
But I think that's the difference of the different types of mediums.
Right.
And I think in a novel, especially a children's novel, you can... How do I phrase this? When you're writing a novel, especially...
A book.
In this case, you want to dumb it down so that it's accessible as a quick read for a child.
Sure.
You know, and I'm sure when he was writing his books...
It's the difference between, like, coming up with something and then adapting that thing.
Yeah.
Next time on Willing to Adapt.
She said, you have brats of your own? He's like, yeah, I've got a boy, Mikey, and one mistake, Matilda. I was like, oh, that's not in the book.
Nope.
Fun fact, in the movie, the portrait of her father, Magnus, that's Roald Dahl.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. But the movie does a good job of... showing you, like, what's at stake. It was tough for me because in the movie, they literally go into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they're going to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very dire. And but at the same time, you see all that's been lost.
Mm.
Like, you see this was her room. This was her doll. Like, these are the things she had to leave behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these things. Obviously, they added bits in where she's, like, trying to control her powers and trying to... You know, it's kind of like that Spider-Man moment. Go, web, go.
Yes.
Stuff like that. So I think in the book, it was very matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, it was much more of, like, an emotional connection.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt. Please like and subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also love if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.